go. John Curley, Sherry Elliker Show. Thank you, everybody, for coming along with the ride. This is great. By the way, Sherry, planning my big summer party again. This is the big thing I hyped up last year and then had everybody come out for the clum, and it's really great. I got to get in touch with Nicole, have her organize it all again.
Oh, yeah. Let her do all the work.
Hey, I paid the bill, and then she ran up to me halfway through the party. We've run out of chicken. We've run out of chicken. I was like, huh? What? Who are you? Aren't you in charge of my party? Diving into the... Right. I'm going to make it an annual tradition.
Are you going to invite listeners like you did last year?
Oh, yeah. Same before, yeah.
I don't know. I think it was Joey the Garbage Man that ate most of that chicken, actually.
Somebody ate it all. I'd say one thing. Nicole came up to me. It's 8:30 and or 9 o'clock, and you've only spent $850 on beer already. I was like, wow, this party's going to pencil out. It's not going to cost me what I thought. And then all of a sudden, it was like everybody got a hollow leg and then filled it with beer. And then, golly, it was nuts.
What was the final total? Like, you don't have to say...
$9,600. Oh, shoot. And what?
How many people were there? That's not bad.
30.
No, there were more than 30 people.
No, a couple hundred.
I mean, what'd you have, like 200? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's good.
I got a limo bus driving people around and I had a little band there. We're going to have a bigger band this year. Yeah, it's going to be a big, big party again. It's going to be really fun. Okay. Celebration. We got ourselves a new sheriff. King County Executive Dow Constantine, who really has a serious fixation with race, he has chosen Patty Cole Tyndale. Now, Patty Cole was the interim sheriff and then didn't seem to really said, go find somebody else. I like the job, but I don't want the job. And then, after talking to people, said, you know what, maybe I do want to be considered. So then, how many were there? Three in there they were looking at?
Yeah, they had Charles Kimball, who was the chief of police in Killeen, Texas, and then a major in the Atlanta Police Department. So it was down to those three.
Yeah, and so then Dow had to choose because, remember, we'd said, well, we're not going to leave it up. People are not going to vote for the sheriff anymore. It's going to be allow it to be chosen so it's open to everybody from all around the United States. So you get all these applications, and then you get the best of the best because you've opened it up to everybody. And Patty Cole Tyndale, who was... sort of just in there kind of holding the place open, ends up getting the nod.
I am pleased and excited to be able to nominate Patty Cole Tyndale to be the new sheriff of King County.
Thank you, Executive Constantine. I am honored and humbled to be your selection for the next King County sheriff. I'm excited about working with the community and our employees to co-create the new public safety agency the community desires.
Sounded rather scripted, the whole thing, didn't it? Didn't have that kind of...
It was a little stiff, yeah.
A little stiff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it says, he said that she brings a broader and different perspective in many ways. She may be the least traditional candidate that we had to consider.
Why, at least traditional in the sense that she had spent most of her career, I think that some as a casino something or other agent, and then, but never got certified, right, as a sheriff or a trooper, right? So then she has to take a bunch of tests, do the whole physical thing, and do some training in order to sort of then come in through the front door as the official sheriff, right? I think she's doing some push-ups and running around, some other tests and things like that, but goes in there. This goes into... I don't know anything about her, just what we've read, but it's one of these things when you have somebody like Dow Constantine who is so focused on race, that then you come in with, well, did you get the job because you're checking quota boxes? You're female and you're black. Do you get more points than somebody who might be white and male? It's unfortunate, but that's what happens in the intersectionality that we have in today's politics, which is, you get more points for being what gender you are, or maybe what sexual orientation you are. You get a lot more points than somebody else. So, and you get come in with that shadow hanging over you. Is that unrealistic? Am I just making something up, or that sometimes ends up being the case for people that get chosen?
Well, I think people can sometimes draw that conclusion. I think in this particular case, it doesn't sound like he was choosing her because of that, although, you know, he would never say that. But it sounds like he really believes that having somebody from a different angle might be the best way to either retool the department or try to get a fresh perspective. She has some, you know, she has a law enforcement background, but it's not typical, right? It's not like the guy from Kyleen, Texas, who was the chief of police. I mean, she was a special agent with the Washington State Gambling Commission. She carried a gun for that. She did have to go through the law enforcement academy. Mm-hmm. She was with the State Employment Security Department. She worked as an investigator in the Department of Adult and Juvenile Detention. So she has been, you know, in the realm of all of that. So I think it seems like a good choice. And remember, she didn't want this job. She said she decided to throw her hat in the ring because so many people in that department went to her and said, please apply for this. We like what you're doing. Please apply. So sounds like, you know, she has what it takes.
Yeah, ultimately, the problem is that you had Mitzi Johansson was in there earlier, and the people that were working under her didn't like her, and she didn't like them, and it got very toxic, and it was a mess. So it really depends on, now you're the leader, do the people underneath you respect you as the leader? And when you say, we're going in this direction, do they go and follow you in that direction? Or is there a lot of, you know, quiet backbiting and, you know, harumphing and people quitting or not wanting to do this, or someone trying to undermine you politically? Do you have the respect of the people that you are now in charge of? That's the question. And then how do you do that? How do you find that balance between being feared and loved, or being respected and feared, or whatever it is that you're going to come in and who you're going to be? You know, Chief Best, I've met Chief Best a number of times. She's a delightful person. I don't know if necessarily if the police saw her as, you know, the best choice to be the leader for the Seattle Police Department, but she was in there at a difficult time. I think near the end for her, when she stood up to the mayor and to others, especially when it came to the closing of the precinct, I think she realized, you know, this job isn't worth what it's doing to me personally. And I think she also didn't like the fact they're going to try to cut her salary. So she probably rode that as far as she possibly could. But when you're chosen by someone like Dal Constantine, who I don't know if necessarily this department and the people that work in that department have the greatest amount of respect for Dal, but this is Dal's person, and that's the person placed in there. Do people follow the new leader? I guess we'll find out. Anything would be better than what ended up happening previously. So best luck to her, and continued good service for those that are out there trying to keep us all safe and sound. The news broke about 2 days ago that Putin might not be well. You're saying abdominal cancer? I had heard that he's got just about everything you could possibly have, possibly Parkinson's. And now also abdominal cancer might be mixed in there. They said that he looks bloated and has that sort of stillness that comes if you start to take particular drugs in order to be able to combat Parkinson's. He has a little bit of a tremor, and he has sort of turned over the reins to his second in command as he goes off to get some of that great Russian health care that everybody wants.
Yeah, there have been a couple of different, you know, diagnoses from afar. Like you were saying, he appears to be shaky and unwell. And so they're saying it could be cancer, abdominal and in the stomach, you know, gut region, they think. Also dementia now, they're saying. And of course, Parkinson's. He has seen an oncologist 35 times in the past few years. So one report said that he was going to be going off to get some kind of cancer surgery, and that's where he's transferring power to the secretary of Russia's Security Council. But there's now this other thing that says this is all theatrics, that it's a distraction, that if he were really sick, the last thing Putin would want would be people around him, and that he's so proud and strong and, you know, just a weird guy, that the idea of him being sick and having people notice or whatever, he would sort of go into hiding, I guess, if he were truly sick. So You know, it, who knows? He's so secretive, and it we'll see what happens if this guy really does take over for a little while. Maybe it is cancer.
By the way, if I were Putin, he takes his shirt off and rides the horse around.
Yeah.
Does he get a good? Yeah. It doesn't look good. You know, does he look at the photo and go, you know what? Hey, next time I try to get on the horse without a shirt, someone say shirt on or something. Because it just, it doesn't, in his mind, I think he still thinks he looks good. But he, even the horse was uncomfortable with him shirtless. The last thing that I had seen, the horse is like trying to like not be in the photo. Still questions as to whether or not he will launch nuclear, right? They've got about a stockpile of 4,400 and some of these warheads. These are the sort of more strategic warheads. These are the ones that not as gigantic. They could be fired from various sort of more mobile discharging units. These are not the gigantic warheads, but enough they could just drop into a city and really cause a huge problem. I think the you hear people on both sides as they sort of debate this. Would he not? If he does, they say he would do it to show people how serious he is. And that would be the taboo, right? We haven't dropped a nuclear bomb since Japan. And the idea is that he's showing everybody, no, this is the new way that we fight. And we come in with a strategic nuclear weapon and we drop it in here and here and we wipe out, you know, 100,000 and just level an entire city. Just devastated, and it's so big and it's so awful that it's enough for everybody, just like when we dropped the bombs in Japan, that we come to the negotiating table at that point, because now we know, oh, this is how serious Putin is. So that would be the big question. And then how would we respond? How would NATO respond to something like that? That we're going into Ukraine now, all of a sudden are we fighting? Do we let him fire off the one and then go to the board and then sit down and say, okay, no more of this? It is a hotbed story. And, it was interesting to see Nancy Pelosi flew over the other day. And actually she got some kudos from people on the right saying, you know, that she's there to see what's happening. And it's still the world's attention still directed towards, Ukraine. Have you been following it? Have you been reading more about it? I know you saw that one story about the bodies of the Russian soldiers that were laid out.
Yeah, they laid them out. You know, the letter Z has become the sort of, it's like the insignia of the Russian army. You know, they would mm-hmm. place Z on buildings so they would know which ones to bomb. And yeah. So, the Ukrainians, there was a village, and what they did was they, after they killed all the Russian soldiers, they put them in the pattern of a Z to show, you know, we conquered this. It's definitely there. I mean, I look at the different stories every day, but they're all kind of blending together now.
Yeah.
And other than the ones that come out, like this one about Putin and, you know, things that are a little more unique, it's just sort of a blending of, you know, this bombing and that village mm-hmm. and that atrocity. And I don't mean to be blasé about it, but it does, after a while, it's just something that's in the background as we right. move on.
Yeah. What's the old expression that one death is a tragedy and two is a statistic, that as it mm-hmm. gets higher up, you're just counting in 100s or thousands to try to get to some sort of milestone. But continuing to watch Putin and his health. By the way, somebody that needs to go see a doctor is this person that decides to talk to Elon Musk. Is this the woman from Entertainment Tonight interviewing Elon Musk? Is this her?
I thought she's from Vogue, but it's
Vogue?
Hard to say.
Either one. Wow. Okay, this girl did not graduate from high school at the age of 6.
Elon, how are you feeling tonight?
I feel great, actually. It's exciting to see all these amazing looks. You know, what we have here is the most talented people in style and fashion, and it's sort of the pinnacle of their work over the year. And
he's doing a lot of work for this woman, is asking these questions, right? He's basically just going to filibuster all the way through.
Just admire their incredible talent, and the beauty that's here is just incredible. So I'm honored to be here. It's just lovely.
An honor to have you here. Also, I'm sure everyone is asking you and wants to talk about this big Twitter purchase. What can you tell us about what you're going to bring to Twitter now?
Well, my goal, assuming everything gets done, would be to make Twitter as inclusive as possible, and to have as broad a map of the country, and that they find it interesting and entertaining and funny, and that it makes their life better.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for that. I love seeing you guys tonight. Have the best time.
Thank you.
And I'll see you inside. Yes. All right. Thank you so much.
You ever worked the red carpet? You ever done that, Sherry?
I have not. No.
Oh, no. Horrible.
It's got to be the worst. I mean,
it's the worst. It's the worst. Know. The publicist goes ahead of you, ahead of the stars, and they'll see you and they'll go, he's right now in the middle of directing this and that. He's very excited about this project. You want to ask him about that. And then they come by and they look at you, and if they don't recognize like your little flag on your mic, then they just blow right by you. Or you try to, and then the one person that does stop in front of you, you have no idea who the person is. No publicist has come up. You're like, you having a good time tonight? Yeah, this is great.
What are you working on? Oh, what's, good.
It's got to be exciting. Yeah, we're very excited.
I would like to challenge anybody that's on the red carpet, any correspondent,
yes,
to not use the word amazing. Have you ever noticed how, that's amazing. Oh, you look amazing. To just get that word out of there.
Something else? How about smash? Smashing. You're smashing on the down low. Right, Andrew?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There we go. Let's interview Chris Martin. Hi, Chris. What are you doing here today?
Just checking out the amazing things going on in traffic right now.
Okay. All right. By the way, I just heard you in my head when I was doing that spot for Advanced Hair, and I had to use the word amazing, and then I thought, oh, God, I couldn't think of another word. And then somebody wrote in, Sherry's really making great points today.
Oh, well, thank you, Mom.
I wrote back.
Appreciate you listening.
I wrote back, yes, I'm really rubbing off on her.
Okay. Of
course. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. There's 16 locations. They've been around for 52 years, not 51. I was listening in on Friday. Yeah, I heard you. Cheating them of 1 year. They're 52 years, Sherry. They've been around. So there you go. And then,
oh, Bucky's, I didn't realize that.
Bucky's Auto. Okay. That's right. I'm just going to mark that down, Andrew, in the book.
Okay.
Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Okay, waiting in big long lines, big queues. My dad wanted to write a book about what line not to get into, and then it turned out to be just the most disgusting, horrible, misogynistic book you could possibly imagine. I said, Dad, you could put this thing, you could give this out as like a housewarming gift for people in the KKK. That's a horrible book. It was all about, because my dad hated lines. He had a whole theory about lines. And when we were little kids, he's like, okay, that's a line you don't want to get into. You see that guy up there with the big pants? You don't want to get behind him. Like, it's just all these weird rules about what lines you should and shouldn't be in. This is called queuing theory, by the way. And it's the customers and businesses are trying to do everything they can to keep people to continue to wait in line. So the theory now is that you go to the back of the line and you help the last person out there, or make them feel like they're not going to wait that long?
Well, when you're the last one in line, it negatively affects your satisfaction and makes you more likely to bail on the whole process. So customers in last place are about 2.5 times more likely to switch lines within 30 seconds. But if somebody else gets behind them, then they're 43% less likely to leave. So what this expert is saying is we need to, you know, we spend a lot of time with the front of the line, you know, where people are being taken care of. We need to invest in making the experience better in the back, he says. But there's the psychology behind this is that we want to feel superior. We want someone to be in a worse position than we are. So when we're the very back of the line, we're like, I'm not dealing with this. I'm going to go over here. Or I'm going to leave. But when somebody gets behind us, we're like, yeah, they're worse off than me. So I'm just going to stick around.
So just as long as you're not the worst off, then you feel okay.
Yeah. Haven't you ever done that where you are in line? It feels like you're in line forever. And you look behind you and you go, boy, we got here at a good time, even though you've been in line for like, you know, an hour. But because there's so many people behind you, it feels better.
I remember when Disneyland and Disney World started it, they zigzagged the lines. Because used to the lines be like straight out, be a half mile long to get into Magic Mountain or whatever that ride was. But then when they zigzagged it, then it didn't feel as long because it was shorter. And then the other thing they would do is they'd have stuff for you to look at, or characters would come by and talk to you while you waited in line. So it didn't feel that bad. I've noticed the thing I hate the most is when I go to get a rental car and the guy in front of me, which I don't understand, and if you're out there, I don't know who you are, I don't know what you want, but I've got a certain set of skills that I'd like to kill you, is when you're in line getting a rental car, it doesn't matter what color the car is. This happened the other day. The guy's like, yeah, I don't want a red one. Guy's like, well, I don't, well, at that midsize, I've got a red one, I have a blue one. Oh, no, I don't want a blue one. You're renting it! I felt like yelling, sir, you're not buying it. You're just renting it. Move along. Move along. So when I get up there, I have my driver's license ready, the insurance, got everything ready to go. Guy's like, and I said, I don't care. Any kind of car, anything you got, anything. I'll ride with that lady over there. Just get me through this line. I don't want to be a burden to anybody else that's behind me, because the other guy in there took forever on the line. I have no patience for those lines. Starbucks did an interesting study. They said that if you open the door of a Starbucks and you look, if there's seven people in line, you will not be the eighth.
I think that's true. I think that's very true, because you don't want to deal with it. And each order, especially the people that order, you know, I want this and this and this and this and this and a half cap of whatever. God, just get a cup of coffee, will you please? And you know what my pet peeve is? Change. Uh-oh. I cannot, and it's women are so much to blame for this. I was behind somebody today, and it was like the thing came to like something in 43 cents. I've got it. And she's digging in the bottom of her purse, and then she's putting the purse on the thing and trying to find the exact change. I know we have a coin shortage, but please just use a credit card or something. But to have a line form behind you because you want to find one dirty penny at the bottom of your purse that you can't find.
Ugh. And then does she end up like throwing like a butterscotch mint up there? Oh, that's a mint. Hold on.
Oh, wait, that's Canadian. That doesn't work.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. No
lie.
Why
lines. I oughta.
I oughta. Huh? And my brother told me that when he went to Italy and studied abroad in Italy for a year, what he was most amazed at is there are no lines. He says, I'm standing in what I thought was a line, and people are just coming right over the top of me. Deuce cappuccino, por favor. Deuce cappuccino. Just, and Chuck goes, excuse me, I'm in line here. Nope. No. No lines. People just leaning over top of people, screaming out their orders. He says, it's just so odd that we queue up for, we in America, we in Canada, we in Great Britain, queue up for lines. Have you been to Italy? Have you seen how they do stuff over there? Just people just screaming. Orders right over top of the dumb Americans waiting in line.
Yeah, I have been to Italy. I don't remember that, but I can see where, you know, if they've got a system and you're just, you know, who's ever most aggressive gets the coffee or the whatever first, that could work. I'd be waiting all day because I'd be like, excuse me, I'm so sorry.
Wouldn't you like to get in there and just scream out your order?
I'd like to, but I wouldn't do it. I'd be all afraid.
No, you just sit back there and passively aggressively, you know, mock somebody who's using change.
Can't you just part the crowd with your giant hands, Sherry? What's the problem?
I just reach ahead and just reach over the counter and just grab anything I can, which would be
just
like
wave
25
at them with
things.
Your hand.
Yeah, right. I'd get their attention by waving. Hey, over here. Billboard hands.
The reason you don't like the change in the purse because your hand gets down there and then you can't see anything. Your hand is stuck in the purse, then you're shaking the purse trying to get off your hand.
Right. Yeah.
What? One more rim shot.
It's John Curley, the radio host.
That's right. Oh, that guy.
Oh, God. Alrighty, that's good. You're writing to us and listening to us. That's all great. It's Money in the Bank, Sherry. And you get a chance to news and entertainment. That's a weird, quirky way that we look at the news. And we are glad you're listening to the John Curley, Sherry Ellicker show. I'm always scolded by Nicole, who does all of my bookings for all of my auctions and travel. She goes, so what are you going to do when you're there? What are you going to do? What are you going to do when you're in New York? I'm like, nothing. Just sleep in my hotel room and then get back to the plane and then blah. She goes, no, you got to go do something. So I decided I would be a tourist in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a huge fan of a Johnny Mercer song. One more for my baby, one more for the road. You know it?
Oh, yeah.
Here's a little bit of Frank for you.
Okay.
We're drinking, my friend, to the end, of a brief episode. Make it one for my baby, and one more for the road.
Johnny Mercer wrote that song on a napkin while sitting having a drink at a bar I was in last night. P.J. Rourke, P.J. Clark's over on 55th. And the next day, Johnny Mercer called the bartender, Tommy Joyce, and said, hey, Tommy, I can't think of a, I can't get a, the song to rhyme with your name, so I changed your name to Joe. So that's why I set him up to Joe. He says, he was like, can't I get a word to rhyme with Joyce? So I went there last night and I sat, and it's a great bar. It's been around since like 1884 or something. And you could see why Johnny Mercer could write a song like that in this. It's just classic, classic New York bar. And I sit down, there's only one seat, and there's an old man sitting to the right of me, and the bartender introduces me to him, and I end up having an amazing conversation with this guy. And I think I've really sort of struck up an interesting chord with him, and he can trust me, and he's telling me these stories. And then, of course, anybody who's lived in New York for a long time, you ask them where you were on September 11th, and he went into the story, and then he stopped and just started crying. And I looked at the bartender, and she looked at me like, what have you done? I just asked a couple of questions, but then he apologized and then continued to cry, this 84-year-old man. And I didn't know what to say to him, and it was very, very strange. And I could sort of sense that the bartender who looks after this old man that comes in there all the time, he's not a drunk by any means. He's just, that's where he goes, and the bartender is his friend, and the people all know him. And she sort of looked at me like, why'd you make him cry?
Yeah, why did you? Did he lose somebody in 9/11? I mean, did he, was the,
I'll tell you what he said. Okay. So he's a professional photographer. And he, when he was there, when it happened, when the buildings came down, he stayed and he kept working and he worked and he did volunteer work and he was with buckets and helping out. But he took absolutely zero pictures because he said the firemen didn't want anybody taking photos. And he says, I didn't want to take photos. I just wanted to help. And apparently he got down underneath a big part of the pile down below, a spot where he saw people, this is terrible. I don't really want to even say it. I'll just say what he said. That he said, I saw four people, all deceased, but all hugging one another.
Oh.
Together. Underneath the pile. There were two people here holding one another, and then two people over here holding each other. Entangled in all of this.
That must be an image that he will never, ever get out of his head.
No. And he said, I went, climbed back up, and I told some of the guys that there were something dead. And with that, he just lost it. And I didn't know what to say to him. And I don't know. It's just, that's the one thing about, you know, conversations with people. And I when I asked him, I sort of encouraged him to tell me that, and then I guess it was something else.
And probably, I mean, 9/11 is enough time has passed that it's not something that he's talking about every day anymore. So bring it up and to have to relive that is probably still incredibly emotional. I mean, I cannot imagine having seen something like that, and you know, you couldn't possibly ever get over that. So it still evokes, you know, just so much grief.
He did apologize. I said, you don't have to apologize. And then he left before I left. And then he goes, I'll tell you what, let's meet back here next year, same time, same place, right here. And I was like, okay, you got it. So, that's the great thing about conversation with people. I talk to so many strangers. There are always so many stories that you can get from people, from cab drivers and bartenders and people sitting to the left and right of you. Just, you ask a couple of questions and you get some amazing life stories from people. Do you do that, or you just sort of sit there and complain about lines and stuff?
Yeah, no, I just sit there and talk about how I don't like the word amazing. Yeah, I do talk to people. I do. I really do. I do. I talk to people because people are fascinating. I mean, everybody has a story, and everybody has things in their lives that they regret or that they love, and that, you know, so it's such a rich thing to do, to be able to draw people out and to talk to them about what their
stories
are. Let's
see if we do that to Chris. Chris, do you have a story you want to share with us today?
No, I normally go hide when people I'm with are talking to strangers next to them.
He hides and trims his beard.
I'll hide in the bathroom.